Hello and welcome to the All Blacks session brought to you by Driving Mall. Hi, I'm Paul, the guy behind Driving Mall, your best place for rugby predictions and opinion. But you know what, tonight it's perhaps the best place for tears about Damien McKenzie because we've heard that what looked like a relatively innocuous injury last weekend has turned into an ACL injury and he's out for effectively the rest of the year. To join me to talk about that and all sorts of other All Blacks chat, I have Michael Pullman. How are you doing, sir?
Very good to be here, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure. So, Damien McKenzie out for, 7 to 8 months, I think it is, did they say?
Yeah, about 9 months.
9 months,
ooh. Maximum, which yeah, obviously pretty troubling. And, I'm not sure where you want to go to start the conversation, but I think it's a tremendous loss, obviously, for the Chiefs and the All Blacks, and for Damien personally. You know, he's worked his butt off for the last 3 years, and to see that happen on Saturday was pretty upsetting.
Yeah, as you say, this is what he and pretty much everyone in that All Blacks squad has been sort of targeting and aiming for. This is what this is as much as they'll talk about the next game or how important it is to play XYZ. The Rugby World Cup is something that's been on the minds for all of that squad, and for it to be taken away like that is really sad. I mean, Steve Hansen said the right sort of thing. He's got two more Rugby World Cups in him at least, so the important thing is that he comes back as well as he can. But I have read some things that basically this is the kind of injury. I mean, we've seen players like Quade Cooper not come back quite as good as he ever did, as he ever was at the 2011 Rugby World Cup after a knee injury. You've had players like Namon Scudder hasn't come back with the same zip and the same step. So there has to be that kind of worry about for Damien McKenzie a little bit as well, surely, Michael.
Yeah, definitely. Damien is a confidence player, and he's also a player that thrives on regularity. And what I mean by that is, you know, playing rugby on a consistent basis. So for him to have, you know, no time on the field for 9 months is going to be devastating to his confidence. And, I think, like, it's not just a headline either. You know, McKenzie is somebody that is the first to leave the dressing rooms to go train. He's the last to leave. And you see that in every Chiefs home game. You know, he's always the first out of the changing shed. And it's sort of ironic, you know, because people talk about him like he plays with no fear, and it's exactly true. And the way that he threw himself into that tackle, which he really didn't even need to attempt, really, is just befitting of the sort of player he is. And I do wonder if what we're seeing, like you mentioned, with Cooper and other players, whether that will be a factor. And I mean, does he, whilst he might have a couple of World Cups still left in him, you know, does he want to stay in New Zealand and, you know, wait a lot longer? You know, I mean, he's a player that can go absolutely anywhere and probably be one of the top earners in the world.
He is, but I mean, it all comes down to, I mean, we've seen other players like, I mean, Aaron Smith. He could go somewhere else after a World Cup. He's decided to stay. There have been other ones as well that I can't remember off the top of my head. Dane Coles, etc. So it's not all about money, and it is a real shame. So we do wish him the absolute best in coming back from his injury, and I guess to me the big thing is that he takes his time and comes back properly and doesn't try to rush back, because he does have plenty of years left in him. And I think, unlike the Scotty Stevenson said online, he's like, cool, this is the hard world of sport where the kid's just got himself injured, and within about 2 hours, everyone's talking about who's going to replace him. Whereas I think it's nice that we've deliberately started by talking about him and the impact for him rather than actually the replacements, because I think it does bear mind to do that. And the one of the things I was going to say is that, yeah, I hope that he gets the mental support, because as you say, he's a guy who likes playing. To spend 9 months on his backside or laying down resting isn't going to do his mental state any good. So hopefully he gets that kind of support as well. But good evening, Stephen. Thank you. Great to see that you've overcome your technical difficulties.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. Listen, once again, a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM. Speaking of people on their back, I thought you were talking about Ashwin there for a moment.
No, it's not. But let's we wish him all the best and to come back, and we wish Arsenal all the best of him to come back from his bad back as well. You are quite right. And Danny Tanner makes a good point that that Damon McKenzie will be back and likely first choice for 2023 campaign. Yeah, he would have been going. He would have been in the match day 23 somewhere, whether he's on the pitch or on the bench. But he's one of those important players for the team. Now, I guess we need to talk about then replacements. So, I kind of saw an interesting tweet from Ben Coles, who mentioned that apparently there are only two. You've got Bowden Barrett and Richard Mwanga, who have been capped, but there are only two other tens currently contracted with New Zealand Rugby who have got All Blacks experience. Can you name the two of them?
Cameron would be one of them.
Brett Cameron, yes.
That's who they took away on the tour last year.
Well, when you say take away on the tour, I mean they took him to Japan and he came straight back again. He didn't exactly go on tour. He went to one game.
Oh, he was capped. He was capped, wasn't he?
He was capped, yes. But he's not been on an All Blacks tour, to be fair. Come on, yeah, sorry. And the other one?
And I suppose the other person, well, he did a bit of a cameo for the Chiefs earlier in the year. You must be talking about Stephen Donald, I'm thinking maybe, but is he still part of the Chiefs squad?
Yep, you're right. So it is. It's Brett Cameron and Stephen Donald. It's amazing to think about how much the All Blacks prepare and have built depth in certain positions that suddenly we're down to basically a 35-year-old who can hardly walk and a youngster who's played one game for the All Blacks is suddenly in the All Blacks squad to go to to every World Cup. That's crazy, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, definitely. And that sort of goes to show how much of a gap, you know, the likes of Lema Sopawanga leaving, which should never have left. Hayden Parker, for example, you know, two talented players there. Marty Banks, for me, I'm not sure what he's doing next year, but man, like, I would love to see him put his hand up. Bit of a cult legend down in Dunedin. So, but yeah, you're right, Paul. You know, I think we've kind of put a wee bit too much around, you know, Bowden and in recent times, you know, Richie and Damien. So it's sort of exposed a wee bit as well.
So a couple of amusing ones that I've heard is that they've looked into whether Dan Carter's available. Or someone suggested, is Dan Carter available? It's kind of like, the last I saw was a social media post with a neck brace on. So yeah, I don't think Dan's really in the position to be rushed back for the Rugby World Cup. And the other one is obviously Aaron Cruden, apparently he's coming out of contract with Montpellier, is it, that he's with?
Yeah.
So there's talk of either him going to Glasgow under Dave Rennie or potentially, or question of could Aaron Cruden be suddenly called back, or are we panicking too early here?
It really depends what sort of player you're looking for. I just suspect with Damien McKenzie, he was something really, really different, and we know that great injection that he can add from anywhere in the field. Really hard guy to defend against as well. So I suppose the question is, what are you actually looking for? Are you just looking for a straight replacement first five who runs the cutter, or are you looking for somebody completely different? Because if you look in the stable at the minute, there's probably not too many guys that fit the bill. The only one that really, off the top of my head, who looks like he could slot into fullback at a pinch because he's actually got pace, is probably somebody like Josh Ioane from the Highlanders. He's lightning quick. I think probably looking at somebody overseas might be too much to ask in too short a time. You know, it might be a different story if this may have happened during the off season. He'd injured himself badly, because let's face it, it was a pretty innocuous way to come up with such a serious injury. I just think it might pay to look for something just a little bit different internally, or else are they going to probably think to themselves, no, we'll take the risk of taking two pivots. We've got somebody like Jordy Barrett who's got a heck of a skill set.
Well, I was just going to mention Jordy Barrett, because Charlie's brought him up in the chat. Could play 10, did play 10 for the under-20s, apparently. So, yeah, he's a guy who's got 10's experience. Or 10 experience.
Another guy, if he was running it around and wasn't injured, who could play fullback and first five. And we're seeing a wave of these players is Stephen Perofeta, but we also know he can be rocks and diamonds at times for the Blues. Last year was probably more rocks than he was diamonds. I'd be really, really surprised if they looked offshore unless there's another injury. Touch wood. I'm looking around for a piece of wood here, guys.
Your back wall is covered in wood. I can see it. You're in a wooden house.
My arms aren't long enough. I have short pockets. I have short hands and deep pockets.
Yes. So if they do go down that the kind of Jordy Barrett cover 10 route, could we see AK suggesting that Will Jordan could be an ideal replacement? Very similar player, has blinding speed like D-Mac. Will be an unknown quantity to his opponents. So could that be the other route to go?
Yeah, I mean, I think if the All Blacks go into this way of bringing players back, it's, you know, like in our recruiting, it's going to just open up a massive can of worms for seasons to come. We've got the talent here. You know, the players that Steve mentioned, O'Terry Black, I mean, great talent. It's just like it comes back to, I really think the All Blacks have built their structure around, you know, assuming almost that Barrett and Mwanga and obviously McKenzie were going to get it done. But yeah, you're right, you know, give a young player the chance. The All Blacks have got nothing really to prove, mate. You know, like, what, we're going to win 3 World Cups in a row? Well, that's awesome. But sooner or later, you've got to bring that new talent, and there's no better way, I think, to do that in the most high-pressure circumstance.
Like I was going to say, the other thing I like about it, Josh Ioane, who does he play with at the Highlanders? He plays with one Aaron Smith. And sometimes if you bring in a young guy who's got a lot of talent, all you really need is some really good, experienced key guys around him, and the world hasn't seen him. Nor, I like your suggestion with Will Jordan, but I also think that I think this World Cup will be very much about a high kick game, and I think they're probably more likely to look at somebody like David Havili, who's also very, very good under the ball. Maybe Havili or George Bridge, probably one of those two. So it'll be really interesting to see what plays out with the Super Rugby coaches in the next couple of weeks, and we might see a couple of clues if guys all of a sudden are being played either at fullback or on the wing. Say, for example, if we see George Bridge playing at fullback, I'm suspicious, Mike. suspicious sort of guy. If I think you start seeing things like that, maybe the likes of Josh Ioane, well, he's got Josh Ioane now has got a perfect opportunity with the injury to Marty Banks to really take his opportunity with both hands.
Yeah, true. He does need to nail that place, doesn't he? To me, we're talking about the one of the highest pressure positions in the in the team. I don't think they'll go overseas. I think going overseas is totally the wrong option. I totally agree. That was all a little bit tongue in cheek, just to discuss it and just have a quick chat about it. But I can't. No, the players such as Dan Carter's a definite no-no. Lee Masopawanga, Aaron Cruden, both no-nos as well because they're not contracted here and been here. One of the good points that when I was having a chat with John O'Connor at the weekend was he made that, look, the All Blacks plan 4 years ahead. And what they do is they start trying to play now how they think the game is going to be played in 4 years' time. And they have that, they build that skill set up over 4 years. So players like Sopawanga, Aaron Cruden have been out the system for a few years, and Nonu, to be blunt as well, aren't up with those some of those game plans, some of those new skill sets that the All Blacks have been trying to put in place for the last 4 years. I'm not sure trying to ship someone back quickly is a good answer personally.
And I think also kicking accuracy, you know, is going to be really important for whoever fills in this first five, because, you know, that is going to be where the tournament's potentially lost as well, won or lost. And I think out of all the players at the moment, Ioane, pretty accurate. McKenzie would have been right up there as well. So, but, you know, don't rule out the likes of Marty McKenzie either. I don't know. There's going to be a bolter. Could be any one of these guys we're talking about.
Right. Okay. So time to bring up the airplane sheet, spreadsheet. And we have currently got obviously Beauden Barrett, Damon McKenzie, Richmond Wanger on the airplane. So Damon McKenzie now gets shifted to the injury. To the injured column, unfortunately, and that leaves a space. So who are we moving up into the lounge? Do we think it's a Terry Black? Do we think it's Josh Ioane or Marty Banks? Who do we think is actually the front runner at the moment? Steve, do you want to go?
Gee, Paul. That's a tough one. I'm Paul, but like Michael pausing because I don't really know.
So we've currently got a Terry Black as being the next one up who is waiting at home. So yeah, do we just...
Based on picking order, he toured with the New Zealand Māori last year. I suppose you're right. He's the next cab off the rank. If it's based on rankings, your next cab off the rank would probably be Brett Cameron. But unfortunately, haven't really spotted Brett Cameron this year. The only time we spotted him was, unfortunately, he was the pivot the night that the Crusaders suffered their only loss in this particular season. So that doesn't all go good for him. So those are probably the two main contenders.
What? So yeah, Terry Black and...
I'll
say Brett Cameron. Okay. So I'll put Brett Cameron waiting at home then and leave Josh Ioane, Marty Banks on holiday for now.
Yep.
So interesting to see that Fletcher Smith is back for the Hurricanes this weekend against the... Is it Fletcher Smith? No. Not Fletcher Smith, is it? The other one. I've gone blank. Is it Fletcher Smith? The Hurricanes. He's back playing for the Hurricanes this weekend against the Sunwolves. So as you say, talk about opportunities to take your or when to take your opportunities. He has this has got to be a key game for him after having a few starts earlier in the season. So we'll see how that goes. But we'll start off with as I say. A Terry Black in there with Brett Cameron next up, and that's how we'll change that for now. The other thing that's been happening this week is we've had a Foundation Day again. Have you seen the players that were selected for the Foundation Day?
Yes, I have, Paul. You popped that up last week. Pretty predictable. The only uncapped player was Akira Ioane. It was interesting. I saw an interview with him last night, and it was just sort of interesting. He's obviously had a good word to Steve Hansen, and Hansen has said, listen, you've still got a few work-ons. He wouldn't elaborate what those work-ons were. I can probably think just a little bit more, just seen a little bit more. I suppose the only issue with a kidder, sometimes we know what he's capable of, but there are times during an 80 minutes he does go quiet, so that's probably what they're looking for, probably more of a concerted 80-minute effort from the Blues number eight.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be one addition to that, because the last one was in Auckland, now they're having one in Wellington this week. I'm just trying to find the name. Who's the person that's been added?
Atumalu.
That's it. Atumalu has been added.
Sorry, how did you pronounce that, Paul?
Exactly the way, same way you did.
Now, can you say it again, please?
Atumalu.
Sorry, Michael, I got to think about buzzers, mate.
dearie me. Anyway, one, it was kind of interesting what Steve Hansen had to say about Marnonu, because they obviously weren't. He said, "Yeah, look, we know about him and all that kind of stuff." But one of the things that he had to prove himself to doing in it week in week out for Super Rugby. What he said, one of the things that Hansen said was that. I'm trying to find the exact wording, but basically, they were only allowed to select players who had been selected for the All Black squads last year to attend these foundation days, and therefore Nonu is not eligible to be selected. And this was to give the Super Rugby teams the ability to plan who they would and who they wouldn't have. You see, so it's kind of interesting that we've all made this decision after the first foundation selection that hey. Marnonu's fifth on the list sixth on the list because he wasn't in the foundation squad. But having heard that, does that change your opinion about anything?
No. No way. You know, all due respect, double World Cup winner, but no. You know, this guy has not been involved in the camp since 2015. Been average overseas. Come back, been average up until recently. No, you know, there are more deserving midfielders running around than this guy. So no, no way.
Tell us what you really think, Michael. it's quite interesting. I tend to agree with Michael. Really and truthfully, I think if Sonny Bill doesn't get injured, I don't think he comes into the conversation. Yeah, he does the things that Marnonu does well, but has he got a better game than the current guys that are there? Because if you wanted a more direct second five, you'd go for Nani Lamalpe. He'd pretty much do the same job. If it, Sonny Bill Williams would do the first thing. I remember probably only 3 weeks ago, Paul, we were probably talking about those five midfielders and who would be the unlucky one. Now, all of a sudden, Sonny's gone down, going to be out of the game for 6 weeks, and you've got, and then all of a sudden you've got Mark, you know, showing a little bit of form. But, you know, for a good part of that game on the weekend, you'd have to say Anton Leonard Brown easily had the better. Yeah, he sat him down on his backside. One part there, but that's something that Ma does really well, you know. And you know, good luck to him. He's playing well. But the only way I see him coming into real contention, I think Steve Hansen's actually being a little bit respectful. Yep, we've seen how well he's playing, and we like what he's doing. But I bet you secretly, like Michael said, I think they're happy with the guys that they've had in the squad for the last 4 years. But I'm saying all that. Dare I say it? I'm reaching for that wood again, guys. If there's more injuries, then dare I say it? He probably comes into the frame. But that would be the only reason in my book he'd come in if there were more injuries.
The Nonu thing, and here we go, Michael Pullman on his high horse. The Nonu thing is media driven. It is driven by the New Zealand media, the same as Stephen Donald. None, those guys are not going to be in the camp, even if there are more injuries. It's just, I don't know. I honestly believe that because from the minute Manu his first press conference, hey, you want to be in the All Blacks this year? It's nothing more than that.
Oh, come on. We are talking about a legend of the game. He's going to be a legendary All Black. I mean, he's over 100 caps, one of the best 12s to have ever played the game in his prime. So I don't think it is just yes. purely the press. I think it is also the fans as well. With Donald, it is all definitely pie in the sky.
Paul, sorry to interrupt, but tell you what, if they pick Nonu and one of these midfielders, say a Lamapi or an Anton Leonard Brown gets left out, you know, we all know Crotty's going offshore next year. I'll tell you what, those guys would be, whoever gets left out would be pissed, and I could probably see them getting offshore, and we wouldn't want to lose one of those good young guys. You know, they deserve, those four midfielders have all the five midfielders that they've used in the last couple of seasons. Nobody's let themselves down. Crotty's, okay, he's had his head injuries, got a few worries there, but these are the guys. I'm pretty confident the five that we've spoken about will probably go into four. It would be something real radical happening if they maybe see somebody like Anton Leonard Brown can cover a wing or something like that. That'd be the only way those five go.
Yep.
Can't see it personally.
Now I still think he is number six on the list. And Charlene said it's talent, not media driven. But I say I still think he's sixth. Alex makes a good point that the media are hyping it because everyone loves a comeback story. Tiger Woods, anyone, he says. And they do like a good comeback story as well. We like a good comeback story and a good underdog story. And let's be honest, in New Zealand, we don't get many underdog stories because generally they're too good. So that takes us to about half time. So we're in a half time break. I just want to have a quick chat to you and say, hey, please, if you have anyone, it's always lovely to hear about the show and the channel being shared and things on social media. But it's even nicer when you say it by word of mouth to a friend of yours and say, hey, check out this show. Go give it a watch. So please let one of your mates who likes rugby know about the show and tell them to give it a watch. That'd be really appreciated. And back to your regular programming. The Singapore Sevens run over the weekend. A bit of a strange stop. I mean, having lived in Singapore and having been to the Singapore Sevens in its first iteration, they don't get big crowds there, that's for certain. But another disappointing weekend for the All Black Sevens. Who caught the games?
On and off. I mean to say, at the moment, their ceiling seems to be fifth and sixth place. The New Zealand Sevens team at the moment, but man, highly disappointing, to say the least. You know, if you sort of consider the squad that they actually took over there. You know, listen, all the names are there: Curry, Collier, Nareki, Newstub, Regan Weir, Kurt Baker, Nicholson, you know, Weber coming back from injury, all the names there. You've got most of the top guys. I don't see too many that you've probably missed. I know they used young Scott Gregory earlier in the tournament. I mean to say, it started pretty well for them, didn't it? That 43-0 win over Japan, but it's sort of and then beating Spain. It actually surprised me they actually got beaten. I think New Zealand got beaten by Fiji. Is that correct, Paul?
Yeah, so they beat beat Japan, then they beat Spain, beat Samoa, and then then got unfortunate. So they topped their group, which is what all you can ask the team to do. And then they met for Fiji in the quarterfinals, and that's where it all. That was the only game. Actually, no, they lost that game, and then they lost the fifth, sixth playoff to Samoa.
It was really interesting. During the week or before the tournament, I was speaking to former Fijian tight head prop Graham Jews, who coaches up in the northern area these days, and obviously follows quite a bit of the Sevens. And I said, listen, why are Fiji always up for Hong Kong? And he said, listen, for them, it's still that traditional tournament to go and to go away and win. And it's played in front of a big crowd, and it's easy for them to get up. They get a lot of support up there, and they still consider that particular tournament one of the premier tournaments to win. And I said, well, that means they probably drop their guard a little bit when they go to Singapore. And he said, yeah, they probably will. So I've got to admit that result kind of surprised me. I thought there'd be a lot for the New Zealand boys to prove in that event. It wasn't to be. I know the coach won't be happy at the moment.
Yeah, the sevens sort of program is in a really interesting place at the moment, like really inconsistent. And like you said, Steve, they've got the talent. Just not performing. And I think with the changes that are going on, and particularly in sevens in this country, it's, you know, maybe that's a factor, I don't know. But yeah, that, to me, this team's been pretty consistently disappointing for the most part. So, yeah, I didn't watch much of it, but I saw all the results on Twitter, and no surprise, really. And yeah, hopefully they still look for Hamilton next year. Got to win in Hamilton third time in a row, surely.
Well, they've got, first off, they've got Olympic qualification, but you're talking about Fiji letting their guard down. They, in the pool stage, they beat Canada, lost to Scotland, then lost to South Africa, and only got through on points difference. So I think Fiji let their guard down, realised that suddenly, oops, we can't afford to do this, and New Zealand met them at the wrong time.
Yeah, it's actually speaking of that final, guys, how many times can you ever remember Fiji being up 19-0 at halftime and losing a final?
Never.
Never. So, once again, credit to South Africa. I stand to be corrected, but was that their first tournament win of the season? I think it was.
Yeah, that's their first tournament win of the season, and it pretty much... I mean, we've got two rounds to go, so it's not all over. But now South Africa got a 14-point lead, and it's 22 points for a victory. So a 14-point lead over England. They're in fourth place, England in fifth. South Africa... it's the second one. They won in Canada as well. So suddenly, by winning two out of the last three tournaments, South Africa have jumped up the table, unsurprisingly, and looks like they've secured that fourth place. So it looks like the four qualifiers are going to be USA, Fiji, New Zealand, and South Africa for the Olympics. Now, I think
not a great tournament from the USA. You've got to say
not at all. But they're still top the overall standings. They haven't made a final since they won it in the USA. So they haven't made the last three finals. So after making the first five finals, they haven't made the last three. So, and funnily enough, that's been when Perry Baker's been injured. They are missing a couple of players, and it does show you that sevens, and obviously with only seven players on the pitch, one or two players can make a big difference, quality wise. On that side of things.
Two rounds to go.
So we've got England or London and Paris to go. I think those top four are probably how it's going to finish, personally. So this weekend, the focus switches to the Blackfern Sevens in Japan, if that's from memory.
Mm-hmm. Very young, from what I believe, they're taking a very young squad as well.
New Zealand top the of one or three rounds so far. The Blackfern Sevens have, so they top the table by 12 points. It's 20 points for a win in this competition in the ladies, rather than 22 for the men's. So you've got to say, I mean, they've already qualified for the Olympics, you'd think, with two rounds to go. Oh, sorry, three rounds to go. So taking a young team to Japan, I think it's mainly injury-driven, but I don't think it's necessarily such a bad idea, considering that, building depth towards that Olympics.
Yeah, that's the be-all now, isn't it, really, for these sevens teams, while the women's program going along swimmingly. You'd rather be Alan Bunting at the moment than who's the sevens coach for the Kiwis? Is it McKenzie? Clark.
Yep.
Scottish. That Scottish guy.
Yeah, and it's
Clark Laidlaw.
To be fair, the Black Ferns Sevens are the best team in New Zealand at the moment. They're better than the All Blacks. So their record is phenomenal. Actually zooming through all the stuff there is to talk about this week. We talked about the 41 Foundation piece. Do you think there's been any changes over the last weekend for players in the pecking order? Has anyone put themselves forward, do you think, to climb it up, or do you think it's fairly stable?
I think we start from those outside backs. I think Ben Smith, you know, in a losing performance with the Highlanders, I think he just once again just showed again what a real class act he is. Sort of looking around, I don't think there's too much change to any of the outside backs. Probably wasn't Jack Goodhue's best game for the Crusaders on Friday night, but it'd still be picked. But no, you don't see there is, to me, there isn't too many changes. Just sort of looking around the backs, I suppose. Te Toiroa Tahu Arangi is something that really concerns me at the moment, to be honest. I mean, to say he's probably listed as number three in the pecking order, but you know what? He hasn't even made the bench for the Chiefs this week, from what I believe. And so, he's actually going on, and he's going away to play club rugby.
So, Michael, you obviously get to go along to the press conferences and stuff at the Chiefs. Any story about that from with Triple T?
No, and to be fair, I mean, we, myself included, we haven't really asked that question. I kind of agree with Steve. Like, it is a bit strange because I don't know what Brad Weber has to do to be third on that list. I mean, he's proven time and time again, but. I think, like I said on Monday, I can't stop thinking about David Harvey and all this. I really think that the door is now open for a lot of people to try and cram themselves through. But David Harvey, real opportunity here. Ben Smith under the high ball, probably the safest pair of hands in world rugby. But he's also, in my opinion, one of the best wingers in world rugby as well. So you kind of got that flexibility. Jordy Barrett, for me, I picked him in my All Blacks World Cup squad because of his size, but I wonder about his composure. So you kind of got this interesting dynamic now. Do you put Harvey Lee at the back? Because you can trust Smith wherever you place him. So, yeah, I'm really excited. And this past weekend didn't really answer any more questions, but the ongoing debate about Adi Savea versus Sam Kane, if we were to look at the All Blacks track record, then you'd probably select Sam Kane. But Adi Savea, holy crap, I mean, he will never be in better form than he is now. So how can you not select them as that starter? But I'm just really excited to see what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting to see about where the they're obviously clearly both Ardy and Sam Kane, presuming they're fit, will both go to the Rugby World Cup. It's good to hear that Sam Kane is back into doing some contact training, which is fantastic to hear. I think that's sort of Ardy, Sam Kane, Matt Todd. Then you got Frizzell, Squire, Fifita for six, and then Reed, Iwani, and Whitelock for eight. I think beyond those nine, I think those it's going to be between those nine as to who goes to the Rugby World Cup in those in the back row slots. I can't see anyone else coming through there. I mean, Stephen and I have both been Blues fans. I mean, Dalton Papali'i we'd love to do, but that's, I think it's too early for him, and he's not really got the game time this season to move his to move that up.
I guess it's, sorry, Paul, I guess it's another thing too. If there are more injuries, particularly in this back line, what happens then? You know, we've already sort of got this question about who the third team's going to be. If Barrett or who is it? Moanga go down, this problem is going to be even exasperated even more. And I think the All Blacks, honestly, have missed a trick. They've really built too much around the three that they thought were going to go, and that's been exposed now.
It hasn't been exposed quite yet, but it could be exposed if, as you say, if they lose another one. Everyone's already thinking about 2015 and what happened there, and whether that's, sorry, not 2015, 2011. And what happened there, where you lost Dan Carter, you lost, I've gone absolutely blank.
Slade.
Yeah, you lost Slade, who had a bit of a glass, who broke his jaw too often. And did Taylor also go down as well, I think? Because somehow, and you lost like three or four tens in that game in that Rugby World Cup, and it is very hard to legislate for that kind of injuries, especially when nowadays you are seeing your third and fourth choices heading off for better money elsewhere quite often.
And you've got Kiwi Derbies still to go in Super Rugby. You've got the Investor Championship. You've got the match against Tonga. And if you don't play, they can't wrap Bowden Barrett and Cotwell. They can't do that for Moana. So you got to play these guys. I don't know. I don't know who that third option is, and I'm really worried about it, actually, when I think about it. Anyway, that's rugby. That's why I'm
Yeah, it is. I was going to say, Michael, next time you're at the Chiefs press conference, you'll have to press the management on the triple T question, just to see what's happening, because it's. I'm very curious. Has he broke some sort of team protocol?
No, and honestly, I mean, that's an oversight on our part. No one's asked that question, so yeah, I'll be sure to ask that.
And I was going to say, your other comments and around David Havili, the other little string to his bow is he's got a heck of a good boot when it comes to, I mean, say something we always talk about is exiting out of your red zone, because the team that we support doesn't do it very well. You've got to have somebody with a big boot if you can actually change those. You can do so much if you put a ruck in the centre of the field that gives you a left and a right option, especially somebody with a big boot. He can also kick goals from long range as well. So can Geordie Barrett as well, but it's handy to have. Listen, if it came down to a straight one-on-one between Havili and George Bridge, listen, George Bridge is a talent, but like Dalton Papali'i, I think he might be just one for the future. We might see him in a couple of years from now in an All Black jersey a little bit more.
Yep.
Cool. Well, any other All Blacks related things you'd like to have a chat about, boys? Because I think I've run through the marching orders. Actually, who's left this week? I'm trying to think. Did somebody signed or somebody?
Liam Coltman re-signed. Didn't he?
New Zealand. Yep.
So he's re-signed.
So that's a. That's good news. You know, speaking of forwards, something I've picked up, and I'm just seeing it with a lot of the All Black players, especially these little short offloads and really confined spaces where they're actually staying right on each other's shoulders. We saw some really good offloads. The Chiefs got some fantastic offloads away, but I thought in the lead-up to the try that Milani Nainai scored, we actually saw two or three really good offloads. Carl Tunukuiafi getting an offload away to Patrick Tuipulotu, or it might have been the other way around. It's not until you actually see these offloads from end on. I just wonder if that's something that these guys have been asked to develop a little bit more, guys. Your thoughts?
Ever since Sonny Bill Williams came back into the came into rugby, it's offloads have been a bit de rigueur, and what people want. But we are seeing the skill level in that go up. That's for certain. And the it's interesting because when Mick the Kick was talking about how it took several seasons or several years to get the All Blacks forwards used to passing. And maybe that's what we're seeing. Maybe we're seeing that they're slower because they don't have as much time practicing that skill. They're slower picking out up and getting their skill up to speed. And maybe that is one of the items they wanted to have ready for this Rugby World Cup, and we're just seeing it coming into fruition at the right time.
Yeah, and I think like other teams around the world need to really watch this quite closely because, you know, we all know that Sonny Bill's going to do it if he's selected. I think they practice for that. But if they don't, if the likes of Ireland, Aussie and South Africa don't look at what the forwards are doing in New Zealand and try and build a game plan to defend that, they're going to get smoked at the World Cup because it's not all about strength at the breakdown. It's not all about the lineouts and the scrums. It's actually about those little minute things that go on. And players play out on the wing who are forwards, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, once you get that quick ball, and once you get them behind a team and the ball is really quick, I don't care who the defender is, you're going to open up. But it's also going to create offside infractions as well because the speed of the ball is so quick. Usually you find that defensive backlines are not able to realign themselves and they get caught out really, really quickly. Listen, it was great to see a lot of All Blacks playing really well in the Chiefs-Blues game. And I thought in terms of skill and quality, that was a real high-quality game. Call me a little bit biased, but I was probably the game of the season. I mean, so we saw a couple of absolute freakish bits of skill by some of those players that were on the field. One of them wasn't even an All Black, well, Māori All Black, and Sean Wainui.
Our friend Unbiased Rugby, who quite often we see on the show, he was saying that's the best game this year he's seen. So now I'm not sure he saw. There was a very, very good Leinster Ulster was a fantastic game as well. So yeah, it's as the game of the season or the game of the year. I'm not sure, but the game of Super Rugby season, definitely yes. I'm with that. I'm on board there.
And how physical. I mean, you know, it's no wonder that Retallick and Harris are quote-unquote injured. But, you know, man, what a physical game. And it's a testament. So often we criticise the Chiefs' medical department. But, you know, Shorter McKenzie, very few sort of injuries to come out of that game. And the same on the Blues side. So, yeah. But I imagine, you know, Steve Hansen was sort of sitting there because he was at the game and sitting there just chewing his fingernails because that was, you know, even more physical than some test matches, actually.
And it's did I read one of your tweets right that Brad Weber is down to captain this weekend?
Yep.
So, as you say, here's a guy that's captaining and keeping out the third choice All Black but can't get into.
It's crazy. There's a couple of crazy ones, is there? Of course, the first five from Tasman, who's keeping Brett Cameron out of the Crusaders, as well as the backup first five. Mitch Hunt, is it?
Mitch Hunt.
Yeah. I mean, is he another option for the All Blacks? I mean, we haven't really talked the whole lot about him, you know?
Wow.
Take your pick.
You know what, Michael? I was actually just thinking, even though we're sort of bemoaning the top end quality of our pivots that we've got around, imagine what Australia, who have they got to pick from at the minute in terms of pivots?
Quade Cooper, that's about it.
Quade Cooper, Christian Liliafano, I think we might have briefly touched on it last night. You know, and we all know the brilliance of Quade Cooper, but we also know the absolute liability he can be when it all goes pear-shaped, as we saw Rebels v Stormers last Friday night. I mean to say, my heart went out to the guy. I really do. I don't agree with all the flack that he copped over the years from New Zealand crowds. It got a bit boringish after a while. He is blooming skillful, no question. But he's defensively, he's inept as well. He's not the great defender. You'll often notice that in defensive situations they push him out onto the wing in defensive situations. So hey, you know, when we start thinking about where we are in the scheme of things, I think we're a hell of a lot better than our friends across the ditch.
I don't think it's not a lack of talent. I mean, we've got Banks, Iwani, Gatland, Hunt, Cameron, Fletcher Smith, Gordon Bashup, the Marty McKenzie, Ty Falcon, Pirafetta, I need to say Higher West. I mean, Terry Black, and there's one more. Up at the Blues, Tudor? No, Turner.
Not Plummer.
Plummer, there you go. So the problem is that it's if you look at the age of all of those and the experience of them, with the exception of Marty Banks, who's been overseas, I'm not quite sure how old Mitch Hunt is, but the rest of them are all in, 23-ish? I mean, they're all early 20s. It's the lack of experience rather than the lack of talent that's there that I think is the real thing.
Are the Maori All Blacks playing any games this year?
It's a good question. Under their contract with AIG, I think they have to play two games a year. Is that correct, Paul?
Well, they played three last year.
Yeah, massive opportunity to put those names who don't make the All Blacks into that team. And but again, you've got to have, if that is the case, you've got to have the Maori All Blacks play quality opposition, not Brazil or, I don't know, like Somalia or whoever they played last year. You know, put these young guys into that environment and test them against quality opposition. I just don't know where that comes from.
Yeah, I can't see it happening this year because you've got the Pacific Nations Cup happening again, which is where you'll basically, all the teams that are heading to the Rugby World Cup from basically Japan, Pacific Islands, USA, Canada, and Uruguay will all get together and have a warm up, and I just don't see where it fits in anymore. It's unfortunately, but it's something that definitely it's a missed opportunity by New Zealand rugby to utilise the Maori All Blacks to get round some of these top tier two nations, they should be getting more games than they do. It's unfortunate. I think it's probably seen as a cost rather than a profit centre, and that's the problem.
It'd be cool if they had a home series, you know, even June.
Yes, it would, but
you know, I'd like to see the New Zealand Maoris go up to Georgia and play Georgia. I think that would be a real, you know, much more competitive match. You know they like a good scrum up in Georgia, so the forwards would definitely be put under a lot of pressure. But I like Michael's thoughts. Sometimes, you say it's great that they're spreading the gospel and the world and the word of the union game around the world. But on saying that, we want to see our next tier of players under some serious pressure, and we don't. It's really hard to gauge. You know, obviously, a few boys came through in that Māori tour late last year. Guys like Putty Parkinson looked really good. Akita probably was the start of his rejuvenation, or his march towards an All Black jersey, shall we say. Altered Black looked steady. It was great to see him out on the field, but in the main, it was just really hard to gauge.
It would. I mean, and you I mean Georgia, Romania, Spain would be a good tour. You could maybe or include Georgia, Romania, Russia, or whatever. And Russia's going to the World Cup this year. So yeah, no, there are the sides out there. The question is, where do you fit in those games around the other games that all those sides play, and around and how many players do you take out of things like the Minor 10 Cup before actually the Minor 10 Cup becomes has no Super Rugby players in it at all?
I mean, you know, you could even go, I mean, I know there's the Pacific Nations Cup and all that, but, you know, bring the French Barbarians down here in June, you know, bring Fiji, bring Samoa, you know.
Well, the French Barbarians, so for the last 3 years, the French Barbarians have toured with the French team. So they've played midweek games, just like they did here. So they came down, when France came down here, they played, obviously, the Crusaders and the Highlanders. Yep. When they went to Spain, when they went to South Africa, they played midweek games against South African A. And so that's something that France are doing on a regular basis every June, which I think is a very good move to introduce. Mm. Getting those midweek games in, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, boys. It has been a pleasure, as always. Michael, why don't you just let people know quickly where they can have a chat with you about rugby during the week?
Yeah, come up to me on Twitter, at Real Mike Pullman. I'm always up for a rugby chat, and you can follow my opinion pieces on therunnersports.com.
Now, Stephen, can you remember your Twitter handle?
H_Stephen73, something like that. Anyway, you'll find me.
You'll find him on shows on here anyway.
Absolutely. I've got to say, it's really great having Michael on tonight. I actually get a word in when Ashwin's on. I never get a word in. So, a lot of good thought-provoking comments. So hopefully it won't be the last time Paul brings you on the show.
Oh, hey, I'm getting schooled and getting told here. Anyway, Driving Mall is obviously the handle. Up there is where you can subscribe to the channel so you don't miss any All Blacks editions. Down there is a link to the main channel where I'll be doing post-match reactions and all of that kind of stuff. And then over there, the artificial intelligence here at YouTube, so you'll enjoy those videos. So check those out. And thank you so much to people like 3M, Alex, AK, who else do we have? Charlie, that have all been taking part during the live chat on the show as well. So don't forget, 8 p.m. every Tuesday, if you're watching the recording, you can come back here and join us live.